for you this past week? It's a little early, but why not just start right up? Did anybody try the, I know some of you weren't here, but if any of you tried the exercise I suggested about not setting a specific time to end your sitting and seeing what happened to you as you watched the wanting to end your sitting. Did anyone try that? Okay, well, if nobody tried it, I'll do something kind of similar to that in our guided meditation. But any comments or anything about anything at all you you experienced during the week, or any questions you might have?
Well, I thought the ending your sitting on the third try, you know, that was really helpful.
Oh, you tried that? What did you notice? Good.
And one time I totally forgot. I just bolted.
Oh, the first time you noticed the desire to get up, you just bolted the first time.
But it's good because it just really lets you know that you can stay there a little bit longer and it doesn't spread out.
Yeah, it is a very interesting exercise. We really start to see how much we're just motivated by these passing whims. I mean, the desire to get up, as you noticed, it often doesn't last that long. So, you know, you can stay a little longer and see what happens. So, no one else try this, or did anyone else experiment with this, with the exercise? Why did you think it was pointless?
Like, I couldn't quite, I guess I was just trying to be a little bit too cerebral about it, figuring out what the catch was to it, or what I was supposed to be getting by delaying the end of the meditation, you know, other than some sense of discipline, I'm sure. But I'm kind of confused about the role that clock has.
Well, let me answer your talk to your first question first, and then I'll come back to your second one. So what I was hoping for you to see in that exercise of not setting a specific time was to actually witness the mind state of wanting, to be actually able to see what it feels like to be in the mind state of wanting and see what happens to it if you are simply mindful of it, to just pay attention to it. Just notice how it feels in the body. Is there a feeling pulling forward out of the body? Is there a kind of a jittery feeling, perhaps, a kind of a restless feeling in the body? What does the body feel like when it wants? And to notice what happens to that feeling. As Anne noticed, it went away. When she noticed it the first time, she said she just acted on it right away, so she didn't particularly notice it. But she noticed that it disappeared, that wanting. And when that wanting disappears, what you notice is that there's necessarily no urge to get up. So that the wanting is the motivation to acting. So you learn about the connection between the mind and the body also in that exercise. So there's a lot to experience. It's simply a witnessing that we bring to the practice, as opposed to a trying to figure out. So that's what that's what I was hoping to have. You see a little bit of in the exercise.
I sort of thought it was very similar to, you know, hunger pains and then not acting on that and breathing. You know, they'll usually disappear and take on a different personality also.
Mm-hmm. Well, and in the end, you end up moving as well. You end up ending the sitting. So we do need to move. If we just sit here forever, we'll die. So, but it's an exploration into our mind states and how they move us, how we kind of automatically act on them, as opposed to really reflecting, is this something I want to do? And so I'm going to talk about more of this intention tonight. It's going to be a kind of a core piece of what I talk about. So I'll cover a bit more about it as we talk tonight. So your second question about the purpose of the clock. I'm not completely sure I understand the question, but most people set a particular time or feel like they have a particular time that they can sit. So I sit for an hour each morning, and I set a little alarm so that I know when that hour is up. And it's simply partly the point of the having the length of time is to keep sitting through things that may seem to be difficult, to not automatically get up when something happens that you just feel like, oh, I can't handle this. So that's part of the purpose of setting a particular time, is to allow yourself to see kind of passages of mind states and passages of body states through your experience. I don't like having to look at a clock, so I do usually set an alarm. I find if I'm having to, like when I'm leading the sitting and I'm having to keep track of the time here, it's not a very deep meditation for me, because I'm, you know, like if I get too deep and quiet, I may end up sitting for like, you know, 40 minutes, and then, you know, we're all sitting here for 40 minutes. That's, you know, not the point of what we're doing here. So I find if I'm actually looking at a clock to keep track of how long I've been sitting, it distracts the meditation. So I like to set some kind of a bell or something to cue me, so I've sat for that long. Sometimes if I've sat for an hour, I feel like sitting for longer, so I just ignore the... What I use for myself is a little a beeper watch, so that if I want to sit for 45 minutes, I set the time on the clock for quarter after the hour, so that when it comes around to the full hour and does its, you know, just chime, its hourly chime, it's been 45 minutes. So it's just a single little beep. And so I don't have to move, I don't have to do anything to turn an alarm off. It just goes beep, and I know it's been an hour. And then I can keep sitting if I want to. So that's a really, I like doing it that way. So that, you know, there's no disruption if I feel like I want to sit for longer. Does this address your question? Okay. Any other comments or questions about the exercises? Anybody who just came in, try the exercise about not setting a specific time for the sitting and seeing what happened as the wanting passed through you three times. It doesn't seem like too many people tried it, so I think I will do a guided meditation that'll give you a little bit of the flavor of it. Not quite as strong, but we'll see. Anything else anybody noticed or wants to talk about, or questions about things we talked about last week? Yeah.
I wasn't here last week, but last week I had something wrong with my hip, and so I was in a lot of pain. And I tried to meditate. You know, I'd get into bed and I'd be in excruciating pain. Mm. You know, I tried breathing, and it did work. You know, sometimes, and eventually I would go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
But is there anything that I should be doing other than that? Just trying to, pay attention to my breathing.
Well, there's a number of ways to work with pain, and I talked about that a few weeks ago, but were you lying on your back then when you're doing the meditation? Yeah. See if you can find a way at all where there's any kind of comfort. But I would suggest finding a place in the body where you can pay attention that's relatively far from the place of the pain. You know, so if the pain is radiating up into the abdomen, it might not be such a good idea to pay attention in the abdomen, but maybe to bring your attention up to your nose or in your mouth, the sensations of the breathing, or maybe just the sense of the whole body kind of expanding and contracting. So try to, you know, keep the attention away from the place. That's one approach. I mean, another approach might be if the pain is just kind of grabbing your attention, which it can sometimes, you know, if there's no way to ease it at all, it can just kind of lock your attention on it and you can get really tight around it. One thing you can try to do is to use the breath to kind of massage the pain, you know, to see if you can feel the breath moving through that area. That's another way to approach it. You know, see if you can imagine. You almost use your imagination to imagine the breath going in and out through your hip.
I was kind of trying to do that, thinking of it as when I exhale, trying to get it to
relax.
Out of my body.
Uh-huh.
And it didn't work. I wasn't having been doing it that much.
Right. Well, one of the things interesting that we learn about pain, actually, as we begin to observe it, is how much of our what we call pain is our reaction to it. So there's a tightening in the mind around the pain that is a lot, actually. It's probably 99% of what we call pain is the reaction in the mind. And then there's the physical sensations. So if we can begin to notice that difference, the difference between the actual physical sensations and the reactivity, it can help also to lubricate the pain. So one way to do that is to pay more, and this can be really challenging if the pain is very strong, is to pay more direct attention to the actual physical sensations themselves. What is it that you're calling the pain in your hip? Is it a burning? Is it a pulling? Is it a twisting? Can you locate it in any one spot? Can you actually point to that spot and say, that's where the pain is? You'll probably find that no, what you find is that you notice it in one spot and then you notice it in another spot and then you notice it in another spot and that actually it moves. So it's not a real constant thing. And when we start to see that it's not this just solid block, but start seeing more of its dynamic nature, it also... it breaks through our ideas of the concept of the solidity of the pain when we start to notice that. So those are three kind of ways to work with the pain. There's the finding a breath away from the pain, the breathing through the pain, and then actually directly observing the physical sensations and seeing if you can notice when you react. I mean, as you're paying direct attention to the physical sensations, you'll probably start to notice this pulling back in the mind, like, no, I don't want to be here. No, no. You know, the mind just kind of jerks back. And you'll begin to see that that jerking back of the mind is a separate thing, a separate phenomena from the actual physical sensations. And you'll begin to get a sense of, wow, there's something going on here that, you know, if I can learn to work with that mind, And we do find sometimes as we pay very close attention to the actual physical sensations of pain, we can get to these places where the mind is non-reactive. And it doesn't really feel the same thing as pain. It has a completely different quality. So when we start to see that, that real distinction, and actually start to see the reactivity disappear at times, we really get a sense of the power of this practice. And also we get a sense of how much more ease there is in the body when the mind isn't reacting. So those are just a few suggestions. Okay, well, let's start with a guided meditation. So let yourself get into a reasonably comfortable, alert posture. See if you can find a point of balance of the spine and let your body relax as much as possible around that balance point. And gently close your eyes. And start by taking a couple of long, slow, deep breaths. And while you do this, remind yourself that for the next 25 minutes or so, the practice is to be present. So connect to the body and a sense of presence on the in-breath. And let go as much as possible. Relax on the out-breath. Now let the breathing return to normal. And now take a few moments to scan through your body and let go of any obvious tension you find in your body. So it's often helpful to do this in a systematic fashion, starting at the top of your head. Relaxing any tension in the crown of your head. Relaxing in your forehead, around your eyes. Down the back and sides of your head. In your cheeks, behind your ears, around your mouth and jaw, down the back of your neck, relax the front of your neck and inside your throat. Let go of any tension in your shoulders. Down your arms, your elbows, your forearms, your wrists, and your hands. See if you can let go of any tension in your upper back. In your chest. Around your rib cage. Relax the middle of your back. The area around your solar plexus and your abdomen. In the buttocks and in the hips. And then see if you can relax inside your body. See if you can relax your heart, your lungs, your stomach, liver, kidneys, intestines. And into the pelvic cavity. Let go of any tension in your thighs and hamstrings. In your knees, your shins and your calves, relax your ankles. The tops of your feet, the bottoms of your feet, and your toes. And now, bringing your attention inside your skull, as if your brain was a muscle, see if you can relax your brain. And now see if you can let that open up to just the experience of your whole body sitting here. A wide attention, just the experience of sitting. Now, within the sensations of the body, become aware of the sensations that let you know that you're breathing. They may be in the nose, the throat, the chest, the stomach, the abdomen, wherever the sensations are most obvious to you, let your attention rest with those sensations. Rest on the rhythm of breathing in and breathing out. If you find it helpful, use a gentle mental label to remind you to stay present with the sensations of breathing, naming in for the in-breath, out for the out-breath. If the mind wanders, acknowledge that it has wandered. You can note thinking or wandering. And as much as possible, see if you can let go of the wandering thoughts and bring your attention back into the present moment and the sensations of breathing. If you're noticing something competing with your attention for the breathing, finding yourself having a kind of attention to stay with the breathing, it's okay to let go of the attending to the breathing. Bring your full mindful attention to whatever it is that's asking for your attention, whether it's a body sensation or a mood. Nothing is outside of the realm of mindfulness. We can bring our attention to anything. If you notice the mind wandering, come back to the present moment, to the sensations of breathing, or whatever is predominant in your experience. For the next 5 minutes of the sitting, I'd like to suggest that you take a vow of stillness. This is not to make yourself rigid and force yourself not to move, but rather to see if you can catch the moment of wanting to move before you move. See if you can feel what that feels like instead of moving and see what happens to it. So tonight our topic is bringing the practice into our daily life. I have been talking about this all along, but it's really going to be my whole focus tonight. So, one of my teachers at IMS in Massachusetts, Kamala Masters, when she first started practice, she was a single mom, and she had four kids, and one of her teachers said to her, "You should sit every day." And she said, "It's not going to happen. There's no way. You know, I've got these four kids. There's just no possible way it's going to work. I'm always on with them." So it happened that he came to visit in her community, and she offered to put him up while he was teaching there after the retreat. And he got to see for himself why she couldn't sit every day. So he said to her, "Let's see what we can do." He said, "Where in your house do your children not disturb you much?" She said, "Well, when I'm standing at the kitchen sink washing dishes, they don't bother me too much." So he said, "Okay, washing dishes will be your meditation practice." And he stood there with her and walked at a kind of a guided meditation with her at the kitchen sink. "What are you feeling now? The warmth of my hands and the water, the wetness and the pressure of the dish, the movement of my hand." So she was kind of just notice all of the sensations. "And what's happening now?" "Well, I'm thinking, I'm planning about making lunch for my kids." Just notice planning. Come back to the sensations. So she got this instruction from him, just at the kitchen sink, pay attention to what's happening. He also asked her, "Is there any place else in the house where you are that your kids don't bother you too much?" And she said, "Well, when I'm walking through this particular hallway, it seems like they don't bother me." He said, "Is the moment you enter that hallway will become your walking temple. Just notice the steps, maybe four or five steps to get through the hallway. Notice what it feels like to be present in those moments. And then let it go when you get to the end of the hallway. You need to take care of all of the thoughts and everything coming up around your children. But for those moments when you're in the hallway, see if you can let it all go and just pay attention to the walking." So I was told, not by Kamala herself, but by some other teachers, that when finally her kids grew up and she was able to go on long retreat, to go on a three-month course, because of this devoted practice in her daily life, she went very deeply into the meditation very quickly because of all of this foundation within her daily life. It's a very powerful place for our practicing in our daily lives. I also began my practice with a daily life practice. When I first started meditating, I could not even envision sitting down to meditate. It didn't seem like something I would even want to do, which seems kind of funny at this point now, you know, spending all these months and months on meditation retreats that I do. But I just couldn't envision it. A friend told me about the meditation, and she told me she'd spent a whole day meditating, and I thought she'd gone off the deep end. Why would anybody spend a whole day meditating? But I had this book describing practicing in daily life. The book was Everyday Zen by Joko Beck. I read two books by her at that time, Everyday Zen and Nothing Special. And they talked about, those books really focused on practicing in daily life. And I was being whipped out of control by my anger at that point. That was what really brought me to the practice, was the out-of-control nature of my anger. It was ruling my life. So I decided that I would try to use this mindfulness practice in my life. Not particularly interested in meditating, but I thought, well, maybe this is something that can help me, this mindfulness. In these books, one of the things that Joko Beck stresses is to not try to be mindful throughout the whole day. She said, if you set that up for yourself as a project, you're bound to fail, and you'll just stop trying because it seems pointless. And I, in fact, had that experience a number of years earlier before I came back to the practice when I was in my 20s. I had picked up the book The Miracle of Mindfulness by Thich Nhat Hanh, and read it, and it's like, wow, this stuff sounds great. I'm going to try this stuff. I'm going to be mindful tomorrow. And I would forget all about it until the next night when I'd pick up the book again. It's like, oh, well, I'll try again. And I'd put the book down at night, and I'd forget all about it till I picked up the book again. And I just, it never occurred to me to try breaking it down into smaller pieces. And I just thought, well, I can't do this. You know, this isn't something I can do. So with Joko Beck's suggestion of picking some projects, I thought, well, that sounds like a good idea. I'll pick two projects. I'll pick this anger, which is so ruling my life. So I will try the best I can to bring my mindful attention to the anger when it appears. And the other thing I picked was something really neutral. I was in the Peace Corps at that point, and I was working on a computer system in my job at the Peace Corps, and an old computer system. So I picked switching between DOS and Windows on the computer. When I switched between DOS and Windows, it was just kind of, I wanted it to serve as a mindfulness bell, a wake-up reminder. Just see what's happening. Just notice what's, you know, how do I feel at this moment? Just wake up for a few seconds and then just go back to what I was doing. But just to remind me to try to be present for a few seconds even. And that happened quite a lot, probably 4 or 5 times an hour. So it kind of brought me back pretty regularly. So what I discovered happening with these two projects is that with the anger project, I would be, at first, initially, I'd be in a full-blown rage before I recognized and remembered that I was supposed to be paying attention to the anger. It was already out of control by the time I remembered to be paying attention to it. And at that point, and I had no training, I was off in the Peace Corps, I was in the middle of nowhere, I was on an island in the South Pacific, there were very few books on meditation, I didn't have any training, no teachers, I had these books that a friend had sent me. So I didn't know much about what it meant to pay attention to an emotion. I didn't know about paying attention to the body. I didn't know about, you know, grounding the attention in the breathing. I didn't know nothing. But I knew that I was angry. And that's about all. I mean, that's the first step. And when I talked the other day about paying attention to emotions, recognition of the emotion is the first step. That's pretty much what I was doing in that practice, just recognizing anger. That's about all I could do. It's like, well, what do I do with this? This is really unpleasant. Well, angry. I know that I'm angry. Okay, I'm angry. And somehow, I don't even know how, but over the course of, you know, paying attention, I could put it aside a little bit and then go back to my work, because this often would come up in my work day. But over the course of watching this, over the course of weeks of watching this emotion, what I began to discover is that I would wake up earlier in the process of the anger. So it hadn't quite escalated to a full-blown rage by the time I noticed it. So I was more in the state of just kind of a normal anger. And then over the course of weeks, even further, I would begin to notice still further, oh, I'm kind of headed into anger. It's more of an irritation. And finally, I think I told the story last week about waking up when I saw a thought. I saw a thought about an apple. The apple triggered a thought of being with the person I was angry with in a fruit stand. So I saw the connection between the what I was doing, cutting the apple, and the memory. And I saw the inclination or the motivation of the mind to get on that thought and become angry. And I saw that I didn't have to do that. So this process of simply recognizing anger, just recognizing the pure, bare, this is anger, I'm angry, was very powerful over the course of months.